Hi everyone, my name is Ishan and this is the Build Your Talent Stack podcast. I started my career feeling like I needed to fit in, and now I shape my own career opportunities. And together with the guests I feature on this podcast, we share how we challenge the status quo in how we learn, connect with an aligned tribe who gets us, and shape our own jobs. And in many cases, these are jobs that didn't exist before. Get ready to be inspired to explore creative ways to learn, future-proof your talent stack, and forge your own path in the future of work in a way that brings out your personality and your zone of genius. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Oscar Trimboli. Oscar is on a quest to create 100 million deep listeners in the world. He is an author, host of the Apple Award-winning podcast Deep Listening, and a sought-after keynote speaker. He is passionate about using the gift of listening to bring positive change in homes, workplaces, and the world. Through his work with chairs, boards of directors, and executive teams in local, regional, and global organizations, Oscar has experienced firsthand the transformational impact leaders and organizations can have when they listen beyond the words. He consults to organizations including Cisco, Google, HSBC, News Corp, PayPal, Qantas, TripAdvisor, helping executives and their teams listen to what's unsaid by the customers and employees. In today's interview with Oscar, we're going to explore what it means to be a deep listener, how to become better at listening to what's unsaid. And he shares inspiring stories from people that he's worked with on how powerful deep listening can be in driving change and creating new possibilities. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Oscar. Thanks so much for joining me on this podcast today. Could you give us a quick intro about yourself and what you are passionate about?
G'day, Ishan. I've been looking forward to this conversation all day today. So thanks for taking the time. I'm on a quest to create 100 million deep listeners in the world. So I'm really passionate about the impact of listening beyond the words, to listening to what's not said, and how that can have a transformational impact across multiple generations, both from the past, but also to the future. So I'm completely obsessed about the commercial implication of not listening. I spend my days in corridors of corporate organizations who have been kicked by the corporate regulators in their markets, whether it's financial services or pharmaceuticals, because they haven't been listening to their customers or they haven't been listening to complaints. And the difference between hearing and listening is taking action. So for a lot of systems, they don't listen to everything the market tells them. And as a result of that, they lose great staff, they lose great customers, and they probably spend way too much time in the media for the wrong things because regulators are correcting their actions. So that's what I'm really passionate about.
Fantastic. 100 million deep listeners. What an awesome goal.
Well, we didn't start there. We started off with a conversation that somebody said to me, well, you know, it's not real unless you put a number to it. And I said, oh, well, you know, I think I can get to 100,000 deep listeners in the world. And Matt, who was a mentor of mine, said, come back next month and add a zero. And I thought, 100,000 to a million. How the heck am I going to do that? So I came back next month and I said, yeah, I can do that. I can do a million. He goes, I know you can. Add a zero, come back next month. And it kind of feels like a fable, doesn't it? A story of the grasshopper being taught by the Zen master. And I just stopped and I said, Matt, how long are we going to play this game? And he said, if you can achieve your goal in your lifetime, it's not worth the effort. It's not ambitious enough. So I came back next month and I said, a million deep listeners is definitely something that I'll never achieve in my lifetime. And that was about 3 years ago. And then a guy in Atlanta, Kevin, said to me only 6 months ago, he said, add a zero, Oscar. He was playing that game with me. And he said, I'm going to help you get to 100 million deep listeners. Now, I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I think by just announcing the goal, it's already created a momentum here in Amsterdam, in Munich, in London, in Atlanta, in New York, all around the world. I can see these little flames gathering together, and I won't achieve it in my lifetime, but I have a good crack. And now what I've learned is Malcolm Gladwell said 2% of a society is a tipping point for future change. And guess what? 100 million is 2% of the Earth's population at the moment.
The magic
So
number.
how coincidental.
Now, what inspired you to focus on the topic of deep listening, and in particular around, there's so many people around you who believe in what you do. What is it about your own personal story, and how does that landed you today on your journey to embark on that quest to gain 100 million deep listeners? Where did it all
Look, so,
start?
some people might relate to this. I was in a three-way video conference between Seattle on the west coast of the United States, Singapore, and Sydney, the three S's of this video conferencing triangle. And it was a budget negotiation in 2000, and I want to say 2012, and I was at Microsoft. And at the 20-minute mark of this meeting, the vice president was sitting across the table from me and looked me in the eyes and said, "See me after, Oscar." And the only thing that was going through my head, Asham, was how many weeks' salary have I got left? Because I'm surely going to get fired. And about 90 minutes after the meeting ended, I sat down with Tracy and she said, "Look, at the 20-minute mark," and I just thought, "I'm going to get fired." At the 20-minute mark, you completely changed the trajectory of the discussion because of the way you were listening. If you could code that, you could change the world. Now, because my listening filters were on, all I was thinking about was, I'm going to get fired. How's she going to tell me? And all I could say, Sean, was, "Do you mean code or code, Tracy?" That was the only thing I could blurt out of my mouth. And she said, "No, Oscar, I mean code." So what she said was, "How could you write down in software, in zeros and ones, the way I listen?" So I walked out of that room and completely ignored whatever she said and just got on with my day job of running a division of Microsoft in Australia. And then 4 weeks later, Chief Operating Officer and Financial Controller of our business said to me, "Brian," said, "can you come to my next team meeting and watch how I listen and debrief me after the meeting because I want to learn how to listen the way you do." Because the way you listen changes what happens in the room. Now, there are many other breadcrumbs on the story along the way there, Ishan. There was going to school with 23 different nationalities next to a migrant hostel and having to listen to people where English wasn't their first language. That contributed to it. Rebuilding the Microsoft graduate program by just listening to the graduates and the wannabe graduates coming into the organization, and then that program getting taken around 26 Microsoft subsidiaries around the world. It was at Vodafone where I would say to people, "If you want to join my team, you need to go into the contact center, listen to the customer problems, and tell me about a problem I don't know about," because I was fiercely and still am fiercely about listening to the customer. So they're all the little breadcrumbs in the stories along the way. But that moment with Tracy, where I thought I nearly got fired,
Yeah,
is kind of what sparked it all off.
yes. Now we're going through significant change in our careers, and the topic of future of work is suddenly top of mind more so than ever before. And the future of work and future skills is often a topic that people focus on around what are the future-proof skills in order to make sure that you can adapt through the changing times. And people would focus on different top future skills, but there's one skill in there that I think sometimes is focused on and sometimes not, potentially because it's taken for granted, but it's of communication skills. I'd love to hear your perspective on why you think communication skills, and in particular deep listening, is more important than ever before in a world that's going through rapid change.
And I think communication is one example, but I also think sense making is a higher order of that. So it's whether you see facilitators or people who use design thinking, these people are using very interesting listening techniques. And I think if you listen deeply, you can help the other person make sense of what they're saying. I was meeting with an actuary, Ishan, about 3 weeks ago. Now, I failed my high school maths, so that tells you how much I know about maths. And actuaries are typically the top 1% of the top 1% of mathematicians. And ironically, most of what they do is about logic and more about logic than numbers, but they're extraordinary at maths. And I sat down with this actuary. And what actuaries typically do is they calculate the probability of complex problems. They work in insurance companies, they work in financial services companies, they work in government policy, and they work with the most complicated issues that humanity is dealing with. And I asked this person that I was meeting with, could you explain what an actuary actually does to me, like I'm a 7-year-old? Well, about 5 minutes later, they finished explaining to me in their most simple way what an actuary does. And I said in that moment, so you're like the people on the beach with the metal detector. You sift through lots of grains of sand to find the lost jewelry, the gold that's sitting under the beach. And all you do is sift through mountains and mountains of data and turn it into insight. And they said, how did you just do that? And I said, well, I was just listening to what you were saying and trying to help make sense of it. And they use that analogy every single day, they've told me subsequently, to explain what they do, and everybody understands it. So when you listen deeply, your job is not to listen to make sense for yourself. Your job is to help the other person make sense of what they haven't actually said. So
Wow, yep.
if we think about this piece of maths, the maths of listening, the neuroscience of listening, I speak at 125 words a minute, yet I can think it up to 900 words a minute. Now, if you're an actuary, you're probably capable of thinking up to 1200 to 1500 words a minute. So you have so much information stuck in your head, and yet there's only a 1 in 9 opportunity for those thoughts to get out of your mouth. It's like a washing machine stuck on wash cycle. It's sudsy, it's messy, it's dirty, and it's just agitating on the same spot. But the minute you go through rinse cycle, when you speak, you clarify your thoughts and you get them out. Now, here's the reality. An actuary explained these numbers to me, by the way, because I would have failed with the maths. If there's 125 words a minute and you think at 900, there's an 11% chance that the first thing you say is what you mean. Now, I don't know about you, Sean, but if I went to a doctor and I had an 11% chance of surviving surgery, my doctor's called John. I'd say, Dr. John, I might get a second and third opinion on that. Yet most of us skate through conversations superficially and take those odds of 11%. You're better off going to a casino roulette wheel. I think you get better odds that way. But most of us don't even know that basics of listening, because we were never taught how to listen at school, unless, of course, Ishan, you had a listening teacher when you grew up, because you're from a different generation to me.
No, certainly
Okay.
not.
So I've asked that question in Canada and in the Netherlands, and I've asked that question in Israel and South America and Japan, and the answer's still the same. Nobody had a listening teacher. But just knowing that most people can't say what they think the first time, if you practice these three simple phrases, you will get 4 hours a week back. You will transform your listening productivity, but more importantly, you'll attract the kinds of relationships that will sustain you, not just in your current role, but in careers beyond this, careers that might mean a promotion inside your organization, or a move to a different organization, or a change of industry, or a change of country, or a change of culture. So keep these in mind, because when you ask these three simple questions, what you'll notice, Ishan, is people will breathe in deeply and sigh and say, well, actually, what we should be talking about, or they'll say, you know what's really important? Or now that I think about it a bit longer, can we forget about what we've just chatted about? What we need to focus on is. So there's three magic phrases. They're really simple. They're really short. The first one is, tell me more. The second one is, what else? And the third one's a little bit more complicated, so please bear with me while I say this. Here we go. The third one is just a pause and use silence. Now, in the West, we have a interesting relationship with silence. We call it the pregnant pause, the awkward silence, the deafening silence. Yet in great listening cultures, ancient cultures, Eastern cultures, Japan, Korea, and China, the cultures of the Middle East, the cultures of the jungles of South America and of Africa, the Inuit of North America, and the Aboriginal and Polynesian and Maori cultures in the South Pacific, silence is a sign of respect. It's a sign of authority and a sign of wisdom. But too many of us want to fill in the gap when it comes to that moment where people pause to collect their thoughts. And all you need to do is let silence do the heavy lifting, and they'll start to say amazing things. Because in deep listening, your job is not to understand what they mean. Your job is to help them understand what they mean. So, Ishan, I'm curious, have you ever been in a situation where somebody's taken that big, deep breath in and gone, well, actually?
Well, it just so happens. Inspired by your book, which I did try to quickly read before preparing for this interview, I thought about a few meetings that we've been running in my work recently and the amount of listening that was or wasn't happening. And I thought about the design, how that meeting was designed. And I thought, what is it that I want to make my mark in, since, you know, it's related to my new role. So what is it about this meeting that I would like to invite people to really reconsider how to make it valuable for them? And what would it take to get people to listen? But in terms of, you know, to prompt them to actually, to say what they really mean, I think what I ended up doing was more about getting them to think about that one really important goal that was worth their time to talk about. And being new helped me pause because I didn't know the answers. I genuinely didn't.
Isn't it liberating?
Yes. It was also scary because I felt like people assumed that I knew what outcome I wanted from that conversation, but I didn't. I wanted people to forever speak their mind. Sorry, what, forever hold it. What's that phrase again? Speak your mind or forever hold your silence. That's right. So I wanted them to speak up and agree to the new meeting format and take turns chairing this new format that we have just agreed. And because being the newcomer, which is not something that I'm have been for a while, I've been in past roles where I've been known to lots of people. There's certain assumptions that goes with how well people know each other and how long they've been in there around what role you play in that conversation. But being new, I did realize that I did take time to pause a lot more and just let them speak up and just take the time to actually go around the room, including the people who tend not to speak up as much, and make sure that I've considered all of their views in agreeing the new meeting format to make sure it was really valuable. So, yeah. But the tell me more and the what else, I think I confused the two together. So the what else implies that what else haven't you told me? Because I think...
Or
Is
what
it?
else are you thinking about?
What else are you thinking about, right? And I think what else is really powerful, because I think I just tend to confuse, keep talking or, keep going as like this sort of open invitation to say everything, but actually they mean very different things. Tell me more and what else. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And as much as deep listening is important, believe me, there is a time to stop listening. And there is a time where there's too much listening going on, which implies there's too much talking going on. And a simple tiebreaker question that will always help. What does this mean for our customers? What does this mean for our voters? What does this mean for our citizens? What would the board make of this conversation? What would this mean to future generations? What would this mean if we were to go into a completely different time and go forward 40 years? In that time, it helps the speakers concentrate their focus, which may be quite random up until then. But that simple question for most commercial organizations, what does this mean for the customer, really sharpens the conversation and gives it both an external perspective, but also a focus perspective. So when speakers are rambling or the subjects become repetitive that we're talking about or bad habitual patterns emerge, some of those really simple tiebreaker questions are, what does this mean for our customers? Will help sharpen the conversation because trust me, too much listening is just as bad as not enough listening.
Now, what are some of the traps people fall into in terms of their own listening habits? And on the flip side, what does good look like in terms of deep listening?
So, Sean, we've got a database of 1,400 people who volunteered to be guinea pigs for me for at least 2 years to talk about their listening journey. And in that research, we asked them what gets in their way. And 86% of people said the same thing. They are distracted before they even get to the act of listening. They have cell phones, mobile phones, they have laptops, they have iPads. That's the first level of distraction. The second level of distraction is they get distracted by the stories the speaker's telling. And for a lot of us, we think that good listening starts with focusing on the speaker. That's handy, but it's not the right place to start. The powerful, the productive, and the potent place to start from is listening to yourself. Most of us turn up to a conversation with about 300 web browser pages open in our brain, trying to process a whole bunch of things. And what we need to do as we step into that meeting is slowly shut down those browsers so we can be available to listen. A lot of us turn up to those conversations with a radio station playing a frequency in our own mind that's completely different to the frequency we're just about to hear from the person who's going to be in communication with us. So, for a lot of us, what we don't understand is listening starts first with you, not with the speaker. And if I was to give you three tips to focus on to make you move from distracted to good and from good to deep, they would be these. Remove anything that buzzes, beeps, vibrates, flashes, dings, dongs, whistles, all those things that notify you, move them out of the way. Now, if I was being a hard sergeant major in a boot camp, I would tell you switch off your phone and switch off your laptop. And for a lot of us who are hearing that, going cold turkey like that freaks us out. So, what I would say as a starting point in that journey of progression, just switch the red notifications off on your mobile phone, your cell phone. Use that as a starting point. Stop putting notifications on apps. Number two, remove any vibrations or sounds that they make. And then you can go crazy and go into flight mode. And then you can go really out there and switch your phone off. The same is true with laptops and iPads and any other devices that make those noises. Just get rid of the notifications. If you can do that, I guarantee you'll double your listening productivity and you'll get 4 hours a week back in your schedule because you won't have to go back and have a conversation that you thought you had when the deliverable they deliver or you deliver is mismatched because you both weren't listening. So, Tip number one, get rid of the electronic devices and be present in that meeting. Tip number two, it's very simple. I once presented to a Japanese company about 8 months ago, and the CEO got up on stage to his company and said, I've read Oscar's books, I've heard him speak, his tips are very easy to do, very difficult to practice. All these tips everybody can do immediately. Tip number two, drink water. A hydrated brain is a listening brain. The brain consumes 26% of the blood sugars, yet it's only 5% of the body's mass. So for a lot of us, we go through the day dehydrated, and what you want to do is drink water, and you want to drink a glass of water about every 30 minutes and make sure whoever you're speaking with also has water available, because listening is hard. It happens in the prefrontal cortex, the front of the brain, the modern part of the brain. And a lot of people say listening is hard and my brain hurts. It's probably got to do more with dehydration than anything else.
Fascinating. So,
yeah. Tip number one, get rid of those electronic devices. Tip number two, drink water. And tip number three, the deeper you breathe, the deeper you listen. So all it takes is three deep breaths in through your nose, down the back of your throat, all the way to the bottom of your lungs, and then out again. There is a reason why high-performing sports people in Olympics, why world champion military snipers, why opera singers of world class focus a lot on getting their state centered through breathing rituals. Again, if you go back to the ancients, no matter whether you go to the Middle East, to Asia, to South America, breathing is part of wisdom. It's part of authority. It's part of mastery of yourself. Now, what I'm not saying is before you walk into a meeting room, you need to go into a dark room, cross your legs, and go into a yoga pose. No, not at all. Let me bring those three things together and tell you how I do it every day, because I walk into buildings in CBDs around Australia and the world. The minute I walk into the lobby, Ishan, that's a signal for me to put my cell phone off and in my bag. I press the button for the elevator, and if there's nobody in the elevator, I'll actually put my back against the back of the elevator and close my eyes and simply take three deep breaths. And if somebody's in the elevator, I'll just look at my shoes, take three deep breaths. People don't even know I'm doing that, but in that moment, I'm setting my intention for the meeting coming up. When I arrive at reception, I'm often offered refreshments, and I'll always ask for a jug of water, glasses for me and whoever's present. Now, this is almost works perfectly for me all the time, except a couple of weeks ago, I went to a 46-story building and my ear popped at level 38. So when I got out of the lift, I had to make a right-hand turn, go to the restroom, do three deep breaths, and then come to reception. But again, these things are easy to do, but they're difficult to practice. And what I'm not saying is that I'm a perfect listener. What I'm not saying is I know all the answers, but I do know through the practice of these three simple things, you'll double your listening productivity and you get 4 hours back in your day, because that's what our database of listeners have told us from those 1,400 people that we've been researching over the last 2 years.
4 hours back. Wow.
4 hours. That's half a day a week. Imagine never having to go into a work in progress meeting and watching people go around the room saying, yes, that I've done that deliverable. And they went, that's not what I asked you to do. I asked you to do this. Oh, no, that's not what I heard you say. And the conversation goes around. And Ishan, I'm sure you've been in those meetings. So one of the things that happens in modern workplaces is this interesting pattern of the scrum, the stand-up.
Yes.
Interesting listening taking place there, isn't there? does it take place in your workplace?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It does, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, so I was working with a machine learning company about 6 months ago. They asked me to facilitate the strategic offsite. And one of the things we do is we have this thing called the ritual of the funeral. So before we can move forward, we need to listen to the past and figure out what's not serving us and what can we leave behind and what do we need to take forward. And what was fascinating was the room was completely polarized. Half the room said we need to get rid of our stand-up or our scrum, and the other half fiercely defending this scrum. And we went, I real time said, hey, let's scrum it. let's get up and I'm going to run the process and let's do a quick scrum. And we only got to the second person, and the second person just said, scrums are a waste of time. We don't do scrum in the scrum format. We don't listen to each other. We don't complete tasks, and off we go. And then the next person spoke, et cetera, et cetera, and we went around. So I stopped and I said, now that we've heard everybody, what should we do with scrums? And everybody had an opinion. And what I did is I went back to that person who said it was a waste of time. And I simply said, tell me more. And they explained what the scrum format should be, and then explained the scrum format they were using. And you could see the energy in the group dissipate very quickly with acknowledgement from everybody that one of the things they don't take the time to do is ask the question every four scrums. So this is a good rhythm for everybody who's in scrum, is to ask yourself the question, how can we improve the scrum? How can we improve the stand up? And what you'll find is, we get habituated into, oh, that person's always going to talk. I'm not bothering to listen. I just want to get out of here as quickly as possible, because they never do their actions from the day before. Sounding familiar so far?
Yeah.
I haven't been into your workplace, but it's a fairly consistent pattern. So for all of us in modern workplaces where we've adopted this, speak with the scrum leader and ask them the question, how do we improve the scrum? And again, that will transform the productivity of the scrum, because we need to listen to everybody to understand what they're getting out of it. I wouldn't suggest the improvement of the scrum take place in the, if you scrum at 9:30 every morning, then do it at a completely different time. Do it at 2 p.m. in the afternoon and just run a scrum on how to improve the scrum. But the scrum master shouldn't be the person running the process. You should get somebody else to do it, because they have a vested interest. So listening shows up in all sorts of ways in the modern workplace, and the scrum can be a complete waste of time, or it can be super productive if we ask ourselves the question, how could we improve the scrum every four scrums?
Well, that example around not listening to each other updates could happen in any other type of a meeting. You know, it doesn't have to be a scrum. It could just be a general team meeting for that matter. And that was the example that I shared before around resetting what the original purpose of getting together is and what do we want to protect in terms of keeping really sharp with our, staying really sharp with our conversations, focusing on the most important thing. Yeah, so it definitely can resonate with very, you know, several meetings where there wasn't enough listening to the updates at all levels. It's so hard to practice, isn't it? It's one thing to observe what needs to happen, but then to help people understand what is within their control to actually do something about it is another
thing. And it takes a lot of discipline to reflect on the process rather than the content. Takes a lot of discipline to reflect on the process rather than the person. And systems that perform really well consistently, whether they're sporting systems, corporate systems, scientific systems, organic systems, these are systems that adapt by listening and improving each time. But you're never going to get improvement by playing the person or playing the content. Too many people need to get their orientation up higher at the process, because at a systems level, if we're listening at a systems level, we're listening at a process level and how parts are interconnected, rather than only the individual components of that being the people or what subject matter expertise they're bringing to the conversation.
Now, Oscar, you said in the introduction around how people said you need to codify how you listen. And whenever I hear the term reading between the lines or reading the room, I must admit sometimes I go, yeah, but what does that actually mean? And it's a skill that doesn't necessarily come easily to people. And if I'm really honest, I'm probably a late bloomer with this one. And what has helped me overcome, I guess, the learning curve in the last couple of roles is really exposure to the opportunity to actually interact with people from that leadership group outside of that setting to actually understand what was said before I came to the room and after I came to the room, not necessarily about the topic I spoke about, but what else was happening in that room and why did they look the way that they looked when it came to my turn. It had nothing to do with the topic that I was presenting, but it was all the other topics that ran throughout that day. But reading the room, sometimes I don't, you know, we don't always get the opportunity to get that feedback from a trusted group and find out what, you know, what was not unspoken and, you know, where did we fail to pick up the signals there, because you often have a very limited time to make an impact. So reading the room is such an important skill for anyone. What advice would you give to someone like myself who wants to be better at reading the room?
Well, my obvious advice would be trust yourself. You're good enough and just relax. You can do it. But let me explain through two stories. The first story was a beautiful, spectacular, strategic 3-day offsite at the beautiful location in a vineyard with a swimming pool and a strategic wallpaper with sticky notes and all that kind of thing you'd expect from an executive team. And we got to the morning tea break and I was readjusting and taking photos and I'm the outsider in this room. And we were talking about the funeral exercise. What do we need to leave behind? What do we need to celebrate? And I made a point of meandering through the area where they were eating morning tea and having tea or coffee or a juice. And then I came back into the room. And what I did next was simply say, well, before we move on, what was interesting to me as I look at what you put up there, you were all talking about completely different issues out there at the morning tea break. So I'm wondering what issues we've missed that you guys were comfortable to talk out there in private, but not comfortable enough to talk in here in the group. And again, I just backed myself. I used silence. And at about the 2.5 minute mark, complete silence, I simply said to the room, I do this professionally more than you guys. I can outweigh you. And with that, a little laugh broke out. And then somebody said, come on, guys. We should be talking about this, this, and this. I said, oh, okay. And you could see the nods when the person mentioned the particular prickly issues that related to a problem customer, a problem employee, a problem project, a problem process, a problem system. And they all got up there and they explained everything that they needed to on those topics. And then I simply said, yeah, but there was one big explosive issue that you guys were talking about out there that we haven't put up on the board. Now, Ishan, I had no idea. I didn't listen to a single word they said out there. But I know when you put a group of people together, you have to create an environment that makes it safe enough for them to speak the truth.
Yeah.
And with that, somebody stood up and said, all right, I'll say it if nobody else is going to say it. And with that, the tension went out of the room. They explained the issue, which was a problem customer that was really unprofitable for them. And we completely readjusted the agenda for the next 3 days based on that. What happened was they agreed that by lunchtime the next day, they would get that customer on a call with the executive team in the room and have a conversation with them. Now, if I didn't take the time to simply dig a little harder. Now you have to have a bit of trust and they have to respect you and they have to know that you're not completely nuts when you say, okay, I heard you guys talking about some issues out there. So number one is just to trust yourself. I always say the undiscussables are never discussed where they need to be resolved. So if you simply ask the room, hey, I'm just looking at this list. If our customers were in the room, what would they say is missing? If our suppliers were in the room, what would they say is missing? If our employees were in the room, what would they say is missing? If our regulators were in the room, what would they say is missing? And what you're creating is a whole bunch of contextual listening orientation for them. So that's one way to do it. The quickest way you could always do that, Ishan, without using silence to create tension is simply to say, what does this mean for our customers? I find that simple question will cut through most of the conversations. The other time I've used this was actually in Melbourne, your hometown, and I was facilitating a different leadership team, a technology team, in a very dusty, narrow boardroom. And it was about 8 minutes to 12, and the CEO was giving me the watch tap because the lunch was coming in at noon. And we'd heard from everybody in this 12-member leadership team except one person. And they were the card-carrying introvert in the team. And I'd asked the team, if our organization was an animal, what animal would it be? And they consistently came up with eagle, or some kind of bird that goes fast, swoops and gathers prey and then moves on. It's agile. It's fearsome. It can compete against anybody else. And yet Elaine, who was to my left, hadn't spoken up. And I turned to Elaine and I reached out my left palm in a gesture to her. I didn't say a word. I didn't look her in the eye, and just created an invitation. Out of the corner of my eye, the CEO, if this was a comic strip, by the way, he would have laser beam eyes and he would have blown off my head because he was so angry. He wanted to eat. He was hangry. He was very hungry. And I just gestured a little bit forward and I stepped forward to Elaine and I didn't say anything. And she said, well, I thought it was obvious. And the tension in the room went up. And I'd step closer to her without looking her in the eye. She said, I thought it was obvious we're all snakes. Our company's a snake. So, Sean, when you hear that, what characteristics or attributes do you kind of characterize a snake as?
Deceitful.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Not being upfront with their intent.
Mm-hmm. And anything else?
Always up to something. Always not, yeah. Sort of watching before it makes its move. What, you're doing the what else on me.
Oh, very good, very good. You worked it out. Now, Elaine and the CEO, you could feel the tension going up here. And so I stepped to the side of Elaine as if to support her. And I said, go ahead. And she said, well, I thought it was obvious we're a snake. A snake sheds its skin every season and we've forgotten how to do that. We've forgotten to adapt on behalf of our customers. A snake senses ahead and uses its tongue to anticipate what's going to happen next. And we're not doing that. And with that, the tension in the room dropped dramatically and everybody kind of bought into the snake story. Now, the backstory to this is really simple. Elaine was from an Eastern culture where snakes don't necessarily have all the negative attributes that the West associates with snakes. Yes. And as a result of this, snake became the unofficial internal logo for the product development teams. Each product release had a different snake name. There were snake beanie toys. They even incorporated snakes into some of their sales messaging. But if we didn't take the time to pause, listen to Elaine, put up with the CEO's laser beam blowing my head off, and that conversation did not finish until 12:32. The CEO was not hungry when he heard a completely different perspective that changed his mind. Elaine had explained to them that the other challenge the group has is 11 of us all think exactly the same way. You all thought we were eagles. And it wasn't until somebody gave me the permission to speak up that I could change your perspective because you don't listen to me. Mm. That was very brave of her to do that, but I'd created some of that trust and so had the group. But many of us won't listen to people in our workplace because they don't come from the right profession. They don't come from the right background. They don't subscribe to the dogma of the organization. And for many of us, we have listening filters on that makes us think a snake is deceitful rather than something that can adapt and anticipate what our customers really need because we have listening filters on.
Yeah, or I guess assumptions around what associations we make with things. Fascinating.
Yeah. So I think for you, it's enough for you to ask the question, what does this mean for our customers as a starting point? And over time, you'll step into your own confidence and be capable of doing that. But you're going to have some more attempts. You're going to have to get some grazed knees and scratched elbows along the way. But communication is a contact sport. You can't do it in isolation. You can't do it theoretically. Communication is something you need to practice and improve on every day. And one of the big areas of communication we need to improve on is how to use silence effectively. Ironically, silence is some of the most powerful part of music, but we don't think of silence as some of the most powerful parts of communication unless we're trained in the ancient ways.
But I also like the way you turned around the question around what does this mean for customers and so forth. But if somebody from the, wearing this hat would be looking in, what is missing? I think I really like that example as well.
And then the question isn't your question.
That's
You take
right.
a higher external perspective and you'll be able to change the perspective of the room. And by the way, if you remember back in that Microsoft three-way video conference between Seattle, Sydney, and Singapore, the question I asked at the 20-minute mark was, hey, this is getting a bit heated. I'd like the group to reflect on what assumptions could we be holding on to that are completely false? That's what changed the conversation's trajectory from a very aggressive budget negotiation to something that got resolved relatively quickly. We finished the meeting at the 50-minute mark rather than at the 90-minute mark because everybody was willing to pause in that moment and go, oh, yeah, I'm holding on to an assumption about market growth rates, or I'm holding on to assumption about product growth, or I'm hold. And we had to get everybody to state them. And then once unconscious implicit assumptions were stated, the landscape for the conversation was like a jigsaw puzzle where you discovered the edges. Whereas before, we were all working with jigsaw puzzles and we're trying to put the pieces in place without figuring out what was around the edges first.
I like that analogy. Top of mind as I face into my role at the moment, jigsaw puzzle.
Well, the good news is we've got a deep listening jigsaw puzzle exercise.
Oh, you do.
Yeah, we've also got some deep listening playing cards and books, and we've got a whole bunch of research. But yeah, everybody definitely has fun with the jigsaw puzzle game because it spotlights their listening assumptions really quickly.
Is it available on your website?
That's
Jigsaw
a good
puzzle?
question. I can make it available on my website. It's something I typically do in-house, but yeah, why not? Let's make it available on our website.
Because I love the playing cards. Thank you for those. But yes, okay. I love a good facilitation activity. My favorite topic on this podcast to explore is how to take ownership of your own future of work by having more of a learning mindset and evolving your own skill set and how you stay relevant. How can better listening skills help us navigate opportunities?
The first thing I would say is your biggest development opportunity most times is getting better at your current job. So the question I often ask people who come to me for mentoring, oh, I want my next role in this and that. I said, just work through this with me. In your role, are you the best in your company? If you are, great. Are you the best in your industry? If you are, great. Are you the best in your country? If you are, great. Are you the best in the world at your role? If you are, great. Now, most people tap out very quickly at the first or second question. And for those people who think they are great in Australia and the world, I say, great. Your job is to teach this in a global forum of your peers to see how good you are. Now, 99 times out of 100, they learn that they've got a whole bunch of skills they need to learn in their role to make them world class. Too many of us think about our development plans simply through the lens of our next move. And I think you learn faster, and continuity in role creates greater productivity for both you and the organization if you work on mastery. So one of the questions people often ask me is, well, how do I know if I'm the best in the world? I said, there's this beautiful directory called LinkedIn. And there's this beautiful tool called Google, and just type in the name of your job title and best in the world, and you will soon find that person. And then have a conversation with that person and compare notes. Now, if you don't think you're the best in the world, then find that person in your country. And if you don't think you're the best in the country, then find that person in your industry. And if you don't think you're the best in your industry, then find that person who's in your profession inside your organization. Now, depending on the size of the organization, sometimes you have to jump out to the marketplace there. I often ask people, congratulations, you get to speak on your role at an industry conference. What would you call your speech? So I'll ask you that question, Ishan. Great news. You get to speak at the industry conference of your choice. What's the topic?
Well, it's actually a question that I've asked myself for a while. So that's a little bit, you've asked me my favorite question. Although I
ask, speculate, what could it be?
What could it be? If I were to get on stage, the story that I want to tell is the story of how people, of untapped opportunity in the workplace to actually learn from each other.
Great. So your starting point is to tell that speech in your team meeting first, and then slowly work your way to other parts of the organization and keep telling that story.
Yes.
That is on.
That is that was my 2020 goal.
Excellent.
And I
excellent.
Yep.
You'll see your career development plan completely differently now that you have to publicly speak
absolutely.
On the topic.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, your original question was, what's the role of listening in your career development plan? So let me tell you about mine. In my career development plan, I deliberately have mentors who are 1 decade younger than me, 2 decades younger than me, 3 decades younger than me, and 4 decades younger than me. So I want to listen into younger generations, as well as the same thing forward. So I can go to any generation in any decade and get a perspective on that. Equally, I ask myself those questions that I just posed to you. Am I the best in my industry? Am I the best in the country? Am I the best in the world? And the best isn't a competitive thing. So I partner with a professor from Israel. I partner with a professor from the University of Missouri. I partner with a professor from a university in the Netherlands and one from Canada as well to understand what are they doing as academics at the cutting edge of this profession. But by far my favorite listening tip for everybody is subscribe to a newsletter completely outside your industry and in a language you don't understand.
Oh, okay. You got me in the last one because here I was going, yep. I've subscribed to a few just for observation, but not in another language. Yep.
Yes, I've subscribed to a pharmaceutical newsletter that's in Hindi. And just the act of trying to use Google Translate and then making sense of what's written on particular topics just frees my mind to go, wow, how many bounded assumptions do I have in the way I listen? And how does learning another language without having to go to language classes help me understand where my listening filters are on and where my listening blind spots are as well? So, Ishan, how have you got mentors a decade younger than you?
A decade younger. Reverse mentoring.
No,
I would
it's
say
not reverse.
It's not
just
reverse.
Mentoring.
It's mentoring.
I get frustrated with that phrase, reverse.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
is
I
that?
Think mentoring, there's an implicit assumption that your mentor needs to be older than you. Who made that rule up?
Yeah.
Where's that written down?
Yeah. Or that it implies it's a one-way
one-way
thing. That's right. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So was that a yes or a no for a decade younger?
Yes, but they're not ongoing. So I get them on an ad hoc basis. Mm. Yeah.
And mentor for a skill, right? Not for just, I want to have a chat with my mentor. So each of those previous or future generations, there's a specific thing I work with them on. And I always say 12 months, 4 coffees, 1 lunch. If you can commit to that as my mentor, you'll get 4 coffees and 1 lunch. And you might learn something from me too. But I've learned as much from my mentors from younger generations as I have from older ones. And I think as somebody who knows that the future is not what I want, not what I can design, but it needs to be something I need to be flexible about in my mindset, to just think that people older than me can teach me something, I feel is a false assumption. That's why I think if you listen across generations, if you listen across cultures, if you listen across languages, you're going to be in a much better state to be a sense maker of the future for people, because that skill is completely transportable across economies, across industries, across countries, and across cultures.
Well, I've learned something today, which is to rethink what I mean by reverse mentoring and what that implies. So, yes, good tip there. Thank you, Oscar, for this awesome chat. I had so much fun talking to you, and I've learned so much from you. And spot caught you from trying to do some in the moment, tell me more questions there. You did get me to think along the way. So, thank you for
Yeah, and
that.
I think the everybody listening right now will enjoy how open you were in the interview, and I think that created a great listening experience for me. So I'm very grateful, Ishan. Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you, Oscar. Where can people connect with you online?
Oh, look, the simplest way to connect with me online is visit listeningmyths.com. And at listeningmyths.com, that will give you a very simple downloadable with the five myths of listening, but more importantly, what to do about them. So you can double your productivity and get 4 hours a day back in your week. And there will be the gateway to the deep listening jigsaw puzzle game, the deep listening playing cards, the deep listening book, and also the deep listening podcast series, where we interview personal and professional listeners, everybody from FBI hostage negotiators, suicide counselors, palliative care nurses, to high court judges, air traffic controllers, and world-class military snipers as well. Did you know that the world champion military sniper is a woman?
Yes, I was halfway through that episode. This is the lady where she shared the story of her child in the beginning, wasn't it? Is that the same?
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating around the focus,
Yeah. So
parallels of, yes.
listeningmyths.com is the answer to any question you got. I'll make it really simple for everybody.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for your time, Oscar. This has been great.
Thanks for listening.
That's it for today's episode. If you enjoyed this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you would leave a review on iTunes and let me know if this has helped you in any way in shaping your career goals. I'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn and Instagram. You can find me at Build Your Talent Stack.